And your 20 minutes starts now.
Thanks. So wave at me or shout or something when I run out of time. Right. I'm an architect, sole practitioner. Over the years, I've done quite a lot of futures projects, trying to look at the future of various things all connected with the construction industry. I'll talk about one of those today. Which is what Alan originally asked me to talk about, was this book, The Professional's Choice, which was published in 2003, but we did the research on it in 2002, so it's kind of anniversary year. But then I see from the paper, the agenda that went out, that he'd put me down as talking about starting a small practice, which I'm not going to do. I did also write a book about that, and I will touch on, towards the end, if I don't overrun my time, some of the implications for small practice of the kind of conversation that we should be having. The future. It's an awkward, difficult place. Nobody knows much about it. We haven't been there yet. Generally, when we look at the future, there are a whole series of techniques that do it. Most of them are pretty standard by now. We're usually familiar with them. The technique that I use most is scenario planning, which is backcasting from about 20 years in the future. And you do several in order to get different views of what the future can be. And from that, you develop a kind of a potential future space that you can work in and you can deliberately steer within. And the future obviously throws up all sorts of nasty events, financial crises, the transition from the West to the East, climate change, huge urbanization across the planet. We're now at 3 years past the point when 50% of the population of the world lives in cities. By 2050, that'll be 70 to 75%. So a huge transition and obviously very connected with the built environment. Oops. Sort of finally on the picture front, almost, peak oil and the need to do something about declining amount level of resources generally, not only fuel, all sorts of resources. Lithium is rapidly running out, and 99% of lithium that is available is coming out of one mine in China. And they know that, and they're not going to let us have it for very long anyway. So there is an incredible need to look very carefully at where we get our resources from and how we look after them when we get them. But what primarily I'm going to talk about is professional futures, professional in the sense of the construction industry, and then sort of hone in towards the end on architects particularly. And when we did the work on professional futures in 2002, 2003, many of the same issues that are up now were absolutely in the air. But one of the prime ones, and this actually it came up over lunch just now, was the lack of trust that was busily developing between society, including clients, government, whatever, and professionals. It's not a particularly new thing. You know, Bernard Shaw famously said that professionals was a conspiracy against the laity way back in the previous century entirely. But it had really sort of begun to come to a head. And there was this series of things. I've just put up a few of them here. Nora O'Neill's Reith Lectures of 2002, A Question of Trust, looking at the breakdown of the relationship of trust between society and those who serve it, delivered in 2002. If they are very good lectures, you can still download them from the BBC website. Well worth doing. Naomi Klein's book, No Logo, looking at the change between a relationship in society that relied on personal knowledge of people and to one very reliant on brand and reputation. And finally, Harold Shipman, doctor, well known for deciding to kill rather too many of his patients, that completely destroyed the level of trust between patients and the medical profession and led to rafts of controls being put in to make sure that all professionals were doing their job properly, because clearly we couldn't be trusted just because we had a few letters after our name and we'd been to appropriate courses and had some nice institutes looking after us. Around about that time, Radio 4 also did this survey of which professions people actually trusted. The ones in red had a minus mark. The ones in black had a positive mark. And you'll be pleased to see that architects are up there. This is 10 years ago. And it may or may not have, sort of, we may have gone up or down since then. I mean, there have been some other surveys since then. The one that claimed that architecture students were the best people for being with boyfriend or girlfriend with, and we were a sexy profession. But it is disparaging. When you look at the professions that are on top of architects, including the one immediately on top, the cleaner, this is where we are. This is where we were 10 years ago. And there's something serious going on here that we need to deal with, because as a profession, we do not know what we're going to give to our clients until quite a long time after they've hired us. So if there isn't that degree of trust, it makes it very, very difficult for us to do our jobs well. I'm just going to sort of run through reasonably rapidly some of the findings. This is very stripped down stuff. It's all there. I think you can download this again from the RIBO website. In some of these transitions have already happened. And one of the good things about doing work some time ago, looking at the future, is you can look back on it and say, how right were we? And a lot of this stuff now looks reasonably obvious, and actually we probably should have been doing only a 10-year survey rather than a 20-something-year survey. So architecture at that point was just on that transition from moving from being in studios, nice light-filled places with drawing boards, to actually becoming entirely focused in dark rooms on computers. And really becoming able to work in any space that any other white-collar work was done in. And with that transition, our work patterns but also became far more like other forms of white-collar employment. And we had to shed quite a lot of that artistic baggage that we've been wandering around with because we worked on drawing boards and had bad backs and so on. At the same time, I think we've seen the commercialization of what we do. So there's far more concentration on profit. I've talked to architects for many years about these sorts of things, ask them about their professional values and say, no, I'm not a professional, I'm a businessman. It's professionalism comes way down the line. Not all, obviously, but there is that sense in which the business side of it has become more important than the ethical professional side. Procurement, at that point, it was clearly on the move, and the amount of projects that were coming from contractors rather than users was increasing. That's now moved very heavily towards the contractor side, so it's well over half now. And it'll probably carry on moving that way for some time still. Greater outsourcing, yes, that's pretty much happened. Whether that's still going on, I think, is for debate. But international competition is really beginning to bite at this point, so that the amount of work that's been done in the universities of India, China, even smaller countries like Vietnam or whatever, to make sure that they don't have to buy in those professional services from us, and they've got something to sell back to us, is been a huge thing, which we will see very shortly within the next few years. We've already seen it in contracting. The Chinese are cladding most of our high-rise buildings at the moment, or at least the more prestigious ones, and they will very rapidly start to move in to providing professional services as well. And there is that shift from being creative and selling our wares on creativity, inventiveness, etc., to being much more of a service industry, needing to satisfy our clients, needing to make sure that we know we've satisfied our clients, and you've got the full range of KPIs that will tell you that. So by 2025, there'll be more management of what we do. It's part of that commercialization we will actually know how we run. We will collect more data. We will make sure that's properly managed. But at the same time, all those demarcation boundaries that used to go around architecture, the kind of stuff we did, that we all competed with each other on the RIBA plan of work, and you did it all the way through from A to M if you were good, that is going to break down hugely. Architects have got much more freedom to cross boundaries, but equally, many other groups have got much more freedom to cross onto to our turf. The power of computer and expert systems, I think, can only grow. I mean, you're seeing it very much at the moment in terms of energy calculations, that we're needing to put in huge amounts of data into computers in order to just make them be justified, and that can only increase through BIM or whatever. I think we predicated that the value of our creativity and our ability to do drawings and things will be downgraded, but our ability to secure deals will be upgraded hugely. And with that comes the bottom point here, that actually what we'd be selling far more of was our ability in soft skills, in communication, in persuasion, in encouraging people to do things that they might not choose to do without us, would be upgraded, as also would be our tremendous ability to make judgments. And judgments are very difficult things. People pay very large sums of money for people to make the right judgment for them. It's not something that the built environment professions really ever sold themselves on. It's been part of our professional shtick that's what we do, but it's not been given a value. And that we saw very much coming to the fore, that ability to say good, bad, or whatever in between it would really develop. Regulations would get simply tougher and tougher, to the point I think we're already seeing now that we don't actually fulfill all the regulations that are put upon us. And we are therefore leaving ourselves very open to being sued for all reasons for not actually complying fully with the regulations that we're supposed to. And that importance of capturing knowledge and storing it and reusing it and recycling it and making sure that it actually develops and is the core of what we do as companies. When professions were set up, that was one of their jobs. The idea that the profession held on to the knowledge that we all tapped into. Nowadays, that's a far more private concern, and it sits within companies and is very much part of the value that they offer to clients. But with that, we saw at a certain point, halfway through this 20-year period we were looking at, that sustainability would suddenly bite. And those who knew what they were doing in this area, who could offer the very difficult solutions that would be required from architects, would suddenly be in a very good position. And I think we're beginning to see that happening now. and that can only become more so. So the challenge is maintaining that healthy balance between creativity and risk. Creativity is probably asked less of us, but something we want to provide more of. Making sure that our interest as a profession concerned with the skills and the craft of architecture don't get lost in terms of that managerial service culture idea. And how to work to a professional ethic while blurring the boundaries of what we do. And I think the conclusion of the report was that there would still be that demand for the professional, someone, that body of people with a wide set of skills, and there was still a job to be done, but actually the people who would be doing it would begin to change. And one of the nice things of doing this is that it's been come back to twice already in the 10 years since it was published. This was published last year by Building Futures. It was the second return to the study, looking at the themes it brought out. And they flagged up a number of things about who will design our environment in 2025. And they essentially, the very small and the very big or the very local. And there was opportunities to grow in a number of areas. But this, I thought, was one of the most interesting things that they flagged up. It's right on the cover of the report. That actually the value in being an architectural practice with the rules that go around being an architectural practice was beginning to be lost. We needed to be more creative, more entrepreneurial than that. There were many other skills we had that we could sell that weren't as part of the plan of work, and then we needed to break out of our constraints. And interestingly, very much tied in with a phrase that Charles Handy used about the work we do, that actually what we do is still absolutely essential, but the way we do it, how we do it, what we're called when we do it, that will change. So just to finish on sort of very small practices, as the recent RIBA study showed, they thought that was definitely going to be in there with a chance of hanging on the small practices, and they would be all these things. And you're unlikely to make a huge amount of money that way. And actually, despite the sort of the allure of some of those positives, the nice practice sort of working gently away at problems, giving a good service to clients, actually they come in reality with a very different tinge that is a problem. That instead of being, you know, the gateway to a multidisciplinary practice, actually you're fronting for skills that are being provided elsewhere. And you're maybe poor and happy in the more positive version of this, but possibly just poor otherwise. But there are alternatives to that. I think we need, as practitioners, to break ourselves out of that box. We can be small, but we need to be very entrepreneurial and creative and do things that we think are interesting and important and not simply those that our professions say that we should be doing. It will be very much about selling our skills and really valuing our expertise and knowing where we can place that so that there is a market for it. It needs to be very open. We need to make sure that we aren't controlled by boundaries, and that does require a very high set of connections, not only to the people giving you work, but also to the people who can help you do that work. So that the sort of all the other suppliers and advisors and everyone else who can help you do it And the bottom point, very much, you need to accept the risk that entails. We actually accept huge amounts of risk as it stands, but we're very unwilling to be entrepreneurial. It's a very strange paradox. And of course, I've tried all this, and it can get you into terrible trouble. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon.